Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome to the Cool Project Show. I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and we interview people from around the world who have interesting projects. Today, we're actually on location in Tacoma, Washington, at the fabulous Museum of Glass. We'll be interviewing a number of people on the show, and we're talking about glass. Beautiful, beautiful glass. With us right now, we have Hillary Ryan. She is the Director of Marketing and Communications at the Museum of Glass. Welcome to the show, Hillary.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I love this building. It's such an amazing building. Can you tell us a little bit more about the history?
Sure. The Museum of Glass here was actually designed by a Canadian architect. Architect Arthur Erickson designed the building, and it was part of the redevelopment of the city of Tacoma. So back in the early 90s and the 80s, all of downtown Tacoma was really looking for a way to redevelop its downtown core. And the museum and the Thea Foss Waterway, which is the waterway right in front of us here, were part a big part of the redevelopment of the downtown area. And so the idea was that they were going to put this world-class museum down here, and that would attract both residential and business to come down and change this part of downtown. And the Thea Foss Waterway, which is this waterway, was a Superfund cleanup site. So a lot of money from the federal government was dumped into making sure that this waterway was cleaned up, and it has really transformed the downtown core. So the Museum of Glass is part of the what's now known as the Tacoma Museum District, and there are six museums within walking distance, all in downtown Tacoma.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize it was six. What are the other museums?
There is the LeMay America's Car Museum, which is the most recent museum that has opened. But before that was the Washington State History Museum, the Tacoma Art Museum, the Foss Waterway Seaport Museum, which is actually a neighbor just down on the Foss Waterway from the Museum of Glass, and then the Tacoma Children's Museum. So we have something for everybody here.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long have you been here?
Oh, well, that's kind of a trick question.
Okay.
So I was part of the crew of folks that opened this museum when it opened 14 years ago. I was here for 2 years, the year before the museum opened to the public and the first year of its operation. And then I left and was gone for a number of years, and I've been back here for about 3.5 years. So all told, you know, five and some.
Yeah. So you were here when they were actually getting this all set up?
I was here when they were actually under construction. So I, one of my many jobs at that time was to lead the hard hat tour. So I did a hard hat tour about every week to people in the community, or people who came from all over the country to learn more about what was going on with the museum. So I got to know the engineers and the construction workers really well. Because I was here an awful lot.
Now, what's the hard hat?
Hard hat tour. So when a building is under construction, you have to wear those lovely construction helmets. And so I would, you know, dole those out, make sure everybody was in safe pants and closed-toed shoes, because there was, you know, definitely all kinds of things happening on site. So making sure to keep safety, and then talking about this building.
Now, did you specifically want Arthur Erickson to be the architect, or was it a competition?
I believe they specifically asked for a couple of different architects to do design work, and then they selected him and went through the process with him. So the building is definitely an Erickson. If you're familiar with his work, the simplified geometric structures are a hallmark of his work, as is the metal and the concrete. And this building has what's sort of become sort of an icon for Tacoma, which is the cone, which is our stainless steel clad hot chop, which can be seen from all over the downtown area.
Yeah, I know he's actually designed a number of universities in Canada, and the love of concrete. And you're not allowed to paint the concrete.
No, you're not allowed to paint the concrete.
It's considered art, so the offices are all gray concrete.
Yeah, yeah. He was, I had the pleasure of working with him went at the opening of the building, and I can't say enough good things about him. He was a true gentleman from a different era and in time, and just a marvelous individual, and his architecture is superb. So
yeah, and this facility really showcases his legacy as well. So that's amazing. Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, how did Tacome become so synonymous to glass and glass art?
Yeah, well, it really comes down to one person, and that person is Dale Chihuly. So Dale Chihuly was born in, he was raised in Tacoma. I'm not actually sure where he was born. I should know that. I don't know that. he was raised in Tacoma. He went to school here all the way through high school, and Dale is the pioneer of the new studio glass movement of glass, and that's happening in America. And his love of Tacoma has brought him back here many, many times. His mother lived here for a very long time, so he would come back, and he has a great fondness for Tacoma. He lives in Seattle, but has a great fondness for Tacoma and comes back often. He's been instrumental in starting a number of different projects here in Tacoma that have glasses, their centerpiece. So the Hilltop Artist Program, which is a program that works with middle and high school students, giving them glass blowing skills as well as other academic skills, is something that he started over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So he's just had a love of this community. And the fact that he has this connection has brought people from all over the country and all over the world to learn glass. So the Museum of Glass is here as part of that legacy and as part of his vision of wanting the studio glass movement to continue into the future.
Yeah, and I think for anyone out there who doesn't know this artist, if they've ever been to the Bellagio in Las Vegas.
Or watched public television.
Exactly. They will see his work.
Yeah, he's right now, a lot of the work that he does that most people would be able to see will be in gardens. They're doing a lot of work with botanical gardens and putting his work in and amongst the biological specimens in gardens. So that's for a lot of people, that's where they're going to get first hear about him, other than television and the Bellagio, of course, which is fabulous.
It is. It's amazing. So tell us about the museum itself. You've got some amazing artwork here, and you also have this hothouse. So can you tell me how is the museum run, you know, day to day, and the kinds of programming that you do have?
Sure. Well, that's sort of a long question. Let's see if I can
break it up
into pieces. Like most museums, we have exhibition space. So we put on exhibitions that focus on the medium of glass and see that through a variety of different viewpoints. And at any point in time, those will be changing. So those change like in any other museum. We have, in addition to that, the space that we're in now is our education studio. It's a space where we do hands-on art making with primarily our school groups, but we also have adults come in here and family groups and that kind of thing. What's really different about this space is that this museum is that it's an art making facility. So in the stainless steel cone is our hot shop, and we have the West Coast's largest hot shop. And what a hot shop is a glass blowing facility. Many glass artists work in hot shops. We just happen to have one that's on view and open to the public, so you can come in anytime that we're open, except for when they're taking their lunch breaks, and watch artists work. And we employ a team of four artists who work in the hot shop year-round, day in, day out, and we also have artists come for residencies to work with our team to work on projects that they're interested in pursuing. And so in any given year, we have between 30 and 40 residencies, which is more residencies than any other glass institution and more than most art institutions have. And we have people coming from all over the U.S. as well as all over the world. So most recently, I think we've had people from Scandinavia, we've had people from India, we've had people from Australia, pretty much all over Ireland, everywhere. We've all different corners of the world. So that adds sort of a different perspective. In addition to that, everything that goes on in our hot shop is also live streamed on our website. So even if you can't come here, you know, live in rural Georgia, and coming across the country to Tacoma isn't something that's on your top 10 list to do, you can pull us up on your web browser and watch what's going on in the museum, narrated by our MC, and even interact with them through a chat function. So we have that capability as well here too.
And what's the web address?
Museumofglass.org.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. And so how long is the residency program?
The residency program is 5 days long, so they usually start on a Wednesday and complete on a Sunday. Sometime on the Sunday, they are doing, they do a lecture of some kind to let them know. And then the Museum of Glass also has a number of phenomenal education programs. We run a program called Science of Art, which brings in school groups to learn about how science and art play with each other. We're a great place to talk about physics and chemistry because glass has all those components as well. We have a program called Kids Design Glass, which has drawings that children make, and we turn those into 3D sculptures in glass, so kind of unleashing the imagination of kids and inspiring them to be artists. And then most recently, in 2013, we started a program which has just become a core aspect of the museum called Hot Shop Heroes, in which we work with active and veteran soldiers from our local military installation teach them glass blowing skills as part of their rehabilitation and therapy.
Wow.
And those classes are done off hours. They're not open to the public, but it's part of our educational
offerings. How often do you run that program?
That program is run sort of as a school, during the school year, so it runs September to June. It just finished, and those classes are done in the evenings after the museum is closed.
Okay, and how long are the classes for?
I believe each class runs 5 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing. How many people do you have in the program?
I think we've serviced about, I want to say, 60 to 70 soldiers so far. And we've had a great relationship with Joint Base Lewis-McChord, which is a military installation that's about 12 to 15 miles down the road. So it's very, very close. It's the West Coast's largest installation. And there are a lot of soldiers and vets coming through that really appreciate the work and the opportunity to kind of have something to practice their mindfulness and to be focused on, because they're dealing with a lot of other issues at the same time.
Yeah, this really helps to tap into some creativity as well, which is a nice release for them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Coming up, we'll be talking more with Hillary at the Museum of Glass in Tacoma, Washington. We'll be right back.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. Today we're actually at the Museum of Glass in Tacoma, Washington. Hillary, we were just talking about some of the things behind the scenes of the Museum of Glass. I also noticed that you have a mobile program as well?
Sure, we do. We have what's called our mobile hot shop, which is a semi-trailer that can go out on the road. And this week was just at a local elementary school doing a glass demonstration, but we have it going pretty much all over the country to do these demonstrations. We do our Kids Design Glass program for schools and other groups out there, as well as we just do demonstrations. So that's for both educational and also entertainment use, too.
Yeah. Does it become a really good career opportunity or a nice add-on to other career opportunities that they may have?
I think working in glass is incredibly difficult. The people that work here in our hot shop make it look really, really easy, but they've been doing it for a long time.
Right.
I think there are definitely a lot of places to go and learn glass, and it's a wonderful hobby. Becoming a glass artist, I think, is something that takes a lot of perseverance and skill and time, like any artist. It's hard to make a living doing that, but I think definitely people get the bug when they get here, and then they want to kind of go try it on their own. We do offer hands-on glass blowing sporadically throughout the year, where we take people onto the floor, and so in the fall we'll have a pumpkin making opportunity so people can come and do that, and in the wintertime we do like ornaments, that kind of thing. So we don't do it all the time because that's not what everybody wants to do when they come to a museum, but we do recognize there are some people who want to give it a go. Mm-hmm.
And now tell us some of your glass projects within the museum. Do you rotate your exhibits?
We do.
And how do you work that, like on a... Like, how often do you do that?
It really depends on the year and the artists that we're working with. Currently, we have an exhibition. We have two exhibitions up, one that focuses as a retrospective on the career of two artists, Flora Mace and Joey Kirkpatrick, and then another show, which is a collaborative show and features over 30 artists. We'll be changing that in the fall. Actually, we'll be changing that in the summer and then in the fall to being more on the work of a single artist. And then we'll have yet another collaborative show. So it just kind of depends on what our curatorial calendar looks like and what things are going to happen here. We definitely do one major change out every year. And usually several smaller ones depending on the course of the year and what's on the schedule.
Now, tell us some of your memorable projects that you've had here.
Oh, wow. I think we've done all kinds of amazing things. I think we've had just a slew of amazing artists. One of the things that I look forward to every year is in March of every year we have an event called our Slider Cook-Off. And so it's a blending of food and entertainment and glass blowing all together. Mm-hmm. And that features the work of one of my favorite artists, John Miller. And John Miller is based in Illinois, and he works in the medium of glass in a way that I don't think anybody else does. He likes to blend Americana and pop culture stuff with his glass. And he is well known for, he has several different series, but one of his series is all about diner related items. So he'll make oversized glass French fries donuts or hamburgers, ergo we have the slider event. And he is quite a performance artist, so when he comes for our slider event, he not only does the glass blowing, but it's often done to music with things on fire, and it's quite fun to watch him work. He has a good time and he puts on a good show.
Oh, my gosh.
So we blend that performance element with the visual.
Right, and that's March.
That's in March every year.
Every year. Mm-hmm. Is it for just a week or?
It's a one-night-only event.
One-night-only event.
And we usually sell out. It's a pretty popular local event because you also get to come and not only do you get that great show, we had a fantabulous band this year called the Dusty 45s, who I think will be coming back next year. Great, great rock and roll band. But what people really come for is they get to try sliders offered by between 6 to 8 different restaurants. So they have sort of this gastronomical experience as well. Good night.
It's a good night.
Yeah.
Okay, America, come on down next year.
That's not online. You have to come here first.
So, what other memorable events do you have here or art exhibits?
We had an exhibition here recently called Links, and it was linking the Pacific Northwest with the Australian glass community. And there's quite a Pacific Northwest artists who go to Australia and Australians who come to the Pacific Northwest. There's a big connection between the two. And so in that exhibition, I think it was, I want to say it was 20 or so artists from Australia, and to see how they use glass, use the same medium and many of the same techniques, but come up with an entirely different canon of work was really interesting to me. Everything down under is done differently, and so they spend a lot of the time working with the pieces after they've been blown, and so there's all of this cold work and etching and polishing that's done with the work that just is not part of the typical way that glass is being worked with in the Pacific Northwest. So that was very interesting, and that pollination continues. During the course of that exhibition, we had a number, I want to say 15 to 18 of those artists come and do residencies here at the museum, and so it was an opportunity to really get to watch them work and see how they use the material. And we'll continue to have that relationship with those artists. But it was phenomenal. It was really interesting to me. Because it's just unlike other things that I had seen before.
Right.
We've had people from, like I mentioned, we had a woman from India who was a contemporary artist, but was using ancient techniques of bangle making. I had brought a bangle maker to do that, glass bangle maker. So very, it's all over the world.
Yeah. Where did glass art originate from?
The history of glass art is actually a part of our timeline out in our Grand Hall right now. Glass goes back to the Egyptian period, so it's been with humanity pretty much from the beginning
of time.
Glass can be found in a natural state on beaches from lightning strikes, so it's part of our natural environment and part of our manufactured world as well too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been around us forever.
What is the actual process of the glass making from sand?
We start with what's called batch, which is a prefabricated pellet, basically, that we use to heat to make the clear glass. It really depends on what the artist wants to do as to what the process is.
Okay.
Because there are many different ways to do it. If you think of it similarly to clay, there's a lot of ways that you can, you can coil a pot, you could throw a pot, you could, press a pot. There's different techniques depending on what it is you're trying to achieve. Often what happens here with our artists that are coming to do residencies, they're experimenting.
Mm.
They're trying something that they've never tried before. That's the beauty of the residency program here, is they have this incredible freedom to try out ideas, to fiddle around with concepts that they wouldn't necessarily get to do just on their own free time. And they have not only that, but they have sort of this amazing team of makers that can help them push towards whatever idea that they're going towards and contribute on that process as well.
Right. And is there a cost to the residency program?
there's a cost that the museum pays. Our artists are invited. Artists are asked to donate two pieces to the museum, one for our collection and one for our annual auction to help support the museum.
Okay.
But other than that, there is no cost to the artists. We provide housing while they're here. They do have to get here from wherever they are. We try and take care of them when they're here.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And is there like a screening or an application process?
Do
they have to present a portfolio?
We do. We have a visiting artist application process. There is a process that they go through, a jurying process to get selected for residency.
Now, how large is your exhibit space here?
We actually have a fairly small exhibit footprint. But saying that, we also configure it in a bunch of different ways depending on what we have to show. So, in addition, we also have the outside of the museum.
Yes.
So the outside of the museum is also exhibit space. And right now we have a piece by Martin Blank in one of our reflecting pools called Fluent Steps. Mm-hmm. Next spring, we'll be installing a piece in our second level reflecting pool area to correspond with an exhibition called Foraging the Hive. And this piece will be live beehives.
Oh, very
so
cool.
So we do all kinds of crazy
that
things here at the museum.
Cool.
We try and do some fun stuff. So
yeah.
There's the inside and there's the outside of the museum as well.
Yeah. And I guess the kind of attendances, because I look around at this museum right now and it looks quite busy, is it very consistent flow of people visiting?
We do, most of our visitorship comes in the summer months. This is definitely a stop that many people make as part of their exploration of mm-hmm. the Pacific Northwest. There's not any other museum like this around here. So we do see quite a lot of visits in the summer from out-of-area folks. And then we do see quite a lot during the sort of holiday time. So during the rest of the year, it's busy, but it's nothing like what we see in our summer. And this is just starting. We won't really hit busy time until school is out and people are traveling.
Right. And it looks pretty busy today.
Yeah, it's starting. It's a slow run up. But yeah, it gets us, we go after Memorial Day, we're now in 7 days a week we're open. So we'll be open 7 days a week until Labor Day.
And so you would need a lot of volunteers here. So how many volunteers do you have here?
I don't even know the number. We have a really strong and wonderful core of docents who come to help with the museum, and they lead tours, they work with our education programs, they help us think through the curatorial process, so they're around quite a lot, and then we have quite a lot of interns. We have people, a lot of the local universities attract some great students, and we're happy to have them and mm-hmm. give them an opportunity to do some work for free here at the museum.
Well, Hillary, I know our time is up. I really do appreciate you taking the time out and being interviewed on the Cool Project show. I will post any information you have on our website. And thank you again.
You're very welcome. Thanks for coming by.
Okay, thank you. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be talking to Nick Davis, who's a technician at the Museum of Glass in the Hot Shop. And we'll also talk to Owen, the MC of the Hot Shop. We'll be right back.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren, on Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show, and right now we have Nick Davis with us. Welcome to the Cool Project Show. I really appreciate you coming to have this little chat with us. So tell us your role at the museum and what is it you do on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm the technician here. So what I do day-to-day is watch the equipment, maintain it, make sure it's running smoothly, which entails refractory work, metal work, just making sure everything's safe and functioning smoothly, as well as working on various other projects for the shop, which can include making stands for glass to sit on for display, and making specialty equipment and tools for certain projects we have to do. It's a fun job.
So the art pieces then, they're so varied when you actually create these art pieces. So you're saying you have to make specialty tools for the actual art pieces?
Yeah, sometimes we'll get an artist in who wants to do something that's pretty out of the norm for glass blowing, so we need to come up with a creative way to do that. Like right now, I'm working on modifying what we call a blow mold, which is basically like kind of like a clamshell mold where it's closed around a piece of glass, and then you blow into it to get a form. And so I'm modifying that right now to make it work better so that we can get her idea translated into glass.
So can you then tell me the whole process of from concept to the final product for the audience? Because I don't know very much about glass blowing, but it seems like a very detailed process.
Okay. Well, with a lot of artists, they'll come in with an idea or a drawing, especially the ones who don't normally work in glass. And we'll take a look at what they want to create. We'll let them know the limitations of the material and of our facility as far as scale and like what actually works in making glass and what doesn't. And we'll take it to the hot shop once we decide what we can do. We'll gather up the glass and inflate it and shape it with a variety of tools and processes to what they want.
Okay. Now, do you get lots of custom requests asking for custom design work here?
We do that somewhat. We've had a couple commissions over the past year where we have taken on projects to create custom artworks. There was a church here in town that wanted an entryway piece to commemorate an event that happened at their sister church. There was a shooting and they wanted to remember that for their sister church. And so we created a piece that involved a lot of blown glass and some metal work. And we went through the process of making proposals to them. We did some sketches and then they told us what they liked and what they didn't. And we ended up making some blown glass teardrops and puddles and a cross and some hearts and other things. We just ended up making this this piece in the foyer of their church.
Do you help? Now, you had mentioned to me that you not only do glass blowing, but you also do metalwork as well. Both of them do entail heat. So are there similarities in the processing and doing the works? Or
There are some similarities, but there's not a lot of crossover between glass and metal. Like, they work well together. Like, you use a lot of metal tools to make the glass, and certain ways of putting the glass together with the metal looks really nice, but the glass is a completely different material. It's I don't know, it's like it's hard to describe the differences, but like glass, you can't touch it, and it has to be hot, like over 1,000 degrees the whole time you're working it. So and you can't just put it down, walk away from it, and then come back and work on it later. Whereas metal, it's a lot more forgiving, that like you can form it with your hands a little bit, you can touch it, you can feel it, and you can grind on it, you can set it down, and then like come back the next day and pick it up and work on it again. but glass has to happen generally within like the span of an hour.
Now, when I look at that blowpipe, I always think you have to have very strong lungs.
A lot of people do think that, but it doesn't actually take that much lung power to blow glass.
Yeah.
Because it's basically like blowing up a balloon is the hardest you would ever blow to inflate the glass. Because the glass is really hot and it just takes a little bit of pressure to get it to inflate. You don't need crazy lungs unless you're working the glass really cold.
Yeah.
Then you should just get it hotter instead of blowing hard.
Around the museum, I've seen these great things where kids have done drawings, and then the glass blowers actually make the drawings into reality. That seems to be a really interesting program. How does that work?
They submit drawings. Anyone of the right age can submit a drawing, and we have to pick through and see which ones we can make, which ones are possible to make, and which ones we'll make nice additions to the project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the toughest part is picking them. And then making those pieces is really fun.
Yeah.
Because they're very whimsical and just, I don't know, it's nothing you would ever think of to make. And translating that into glass is a real challenge sometimes.
Right. What is your hopes with glass making?
My goal is to just keep creating as long as I keep getting ideas.
Well, I really do want to thank you for being on the Cool Project show. I really do appreciate it, Nick. Thank you very much. Welcome, Greg Owen. And Greg is the MC for the Hot Shop. So, Greg, can you tell me more about this Hot Shop? Because it is an amazing building. But can you tell me more about the program and what it is, the day-to-day running of this Hot Shop?
So the Hot Shop is an integral part of the Museum of Glass. We're open to the public, and anytime the museum is open, we're in here working, blowing glass. We have a state-of-the-art facility with 2,000-pound furnaces running 24 hours a day. 4 glory holes, tons of annealing space, so we can be as large as a factory, or we can make small things like goblets, depending on what the project of the day is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a big part of the museum. It's not just a looking and museum, but it's a looking and making museum as well. And we have a studio audience of a couple hundred people at any given time, as well as a live online audience on our live feed, so people can watch us working all over the world and ask us questions about what we're doing and how we're making stuff, etc.
The website
on museumofglass.org on our website, or directly from our Ustream TV channel, ustream.tv, and then just search Museum of Glass.
Okay, and we'll put that up on the coolprojects.com website as well.
Great.
For people to reach out on. So give me an idea of the whole glass making process, someone who has no idea of how glass sculptures are being made.
Yeah, well, first of all, you need glass, and the glass that we use right now comes from Washington State, Woodinville, Washington. It's mostly sand, and soda ash and lime are the other main ingredients, so we buy clear glass from them. The colored glass we use comes from primarily Germany, and there's another company in New Zealand, and that's made by adding different metals, sulfides and oxides, to the clear glass before they melt it. So that's the material, and then glass blowing itself is a 2,000-year-old tradition, and it's just liquid glass in a pot. It's like soup sitting in a soup pot, and someone puts a rod in there and gathers it out like gathering honey. And then we have a variety of hand tools, scissors, tweezers, shears, wet newspaper, wooden paddles, and with those simple tools, we make all the stuff that you see at the museum.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, Nick was saying it's usually an hour to make a piece. I always thought it was longer, that there was a lot more involved.
You know, it depends on what we're making. Since we're host visiting artists here from all over the world, everyone's got a different project. And Nick, who you spoke to, he can make a beautiful little horse in about 90 seconds. But sometimes we'll just make one piece in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll spend hours making different parts and then assemble them together later on. So since everything's different, we don't really have an average. But, yeah, it could be anywhere from 2 minutes to 4 hours to make a piece,
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it's about an hour, I'd say, for average, yeah.
What's been some of the most interesting and challenging art pieces that you've seen here, especially with the visiting residences?
Since we get the world's greatest glass artists here, I'm constantly amazed. I've been doing glass stuff for 30 years, and I'm always getting blown out of the water by what I see. Probably the most amazing glassblower is Lino Tagliapietra. He's the world's best glassblower, going on 82. I started when he was 11. And he'll be here the last week of July working again. And he comes once or twice a year to work. And the level of mastery that he exhibits and displays here for our audience is unlike anything you've ever seen. You know, for those people that have never seen him before, it can be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. For those of us that are glass addicts, we just sit and watch him and can do so for hours, because just by watching him, even without him talking, you can learn so much from the way he moves. So,
where is he from?
Murano, Italy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so the island off Venice. Yeah.
There's a lot of glass artwork here.
There's lots of glass.
There's lots of glass artwork. How many kinds of artists do you cover here?
We cover anything in glass. And, you know, we'll have historical glass, factory glass from the 17th or 18th century. We don't have a lot of ancient glass. That's more a Corning Museum's kind of ballpark. But we're primarily focused on contemporary glass art. So we'll get artists from all over the world. And at any given time, we could have an exhibition of one or two artists. Like right now, we have Flora Mace and Joey Kirkpatrick's show and taking up most of our gallery space. And then our other exhibition is a survey of work that was made here at the museum where the public got to choose and create the show called Be the Curator. We can have just one artist show, and we'll have a Dale Cihulli show or have a Lino show, or it could be lots of people. And we also do the kids' design program. So
yes, tell me more about that, because that looks so much fun.
It's super sweet, yeah. So we ask kids to do drawings of pieces they'd like to see made in glass, and then the team chooses one once a month to make. And, you know, the kids don't know what's possible and what's not possible, and their ideas are just so amazing. It's a great challenge for the glassblowers, and the kids just love it. So the team makes two of them. The kid's family gets to keep one, and then we keep one for the museum. And we've shown that work all over the world. Actually, we did a big run of kids' design for the Shanghai Glass Museum in Shanghai, China.
So you do a traveling exhibit as well?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the Shanghai Museum actually commissioned us to make some stuff from drawings of kids in China that they had designed. And so we did that live on Skype so the kids and their family could be watching online when we were working here.
And how big are the pieces when you do make them?
You know, they vary anywhere from the size of a football to the size of a beach ball, I'd say, on average.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were that big.
Yeah, they're good size.
Yeah, I just thought they were like hand size that sit in the palm of your
hand. Yeah, there's a few in our art alley. When you go back into the Grand Hall, you can see some of the finished ones there.
Okay, well, we'll take some pictures and put them up on cool projects as
good.
Well. And how many, so for the Heart Shop, you're making glass pieces all day long.
All day long. We take lunch.
We do take lunch. Do you have predefined pieces that you're going to make?
You know,
how
it
does
just
that work?
It just depends on what the project is. When we host visiting artists, they're here from Wednesday through Sunday, and so we're making whatever they ask us to make.
Oh, okay, and then that's part of the show as well for visitors to see.
Exactly, and that's what we're working right now with furniture designer Vivian Beer, so we're helping her make stuff. She just won Ellen DeGeneres' design challenge, so people in the audience know who she is.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes we have projects for the museum, like we have a fundraising event and they need to make 50 goblets to sell or 30 centerpiece decanters, so we'll make stuff for museum projects as well. And there's no standard. Every day is different. And so the team here, the glassblowers, are very adaptable and very skilled, and they can pretty much make whatever anybody throws at them.
Thank you very much for being on the Cool Project show.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
This was great. I really do appreciate you having this quick little interview with me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll be right back on America's Web Radio.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key. and the trained staff at EHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
This is Doug Dahlgren of The Prologue. America's Web Radio offers a wide variety of programming that will keep you interested and entertained throughout your week. There are shows about medicine and your health, energy issues, antique cars, our Constitution, vegetables and gardening, politics and opinion, business issues and legal matters, like drones and how they can affect your life. On Fridays at 11 a.m., you can listen to my show, The Prologue, with a new author and a book I just know you'll want to read. The good news is, if you miss a show, they're all archived and available in podcast form when you're ready to listen as often as you like. So stay tuned, won't you, to America's Web Radio and add to the enjoyment of your day.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And with us today, we have Vivian Beer, a furniture designer and furniture maker, and she has her business in New England called Vivian Beer Studio Works. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, jumping right in, I'm so excited to hear that you are here at the Museum of Glass. Just quickly, just give us a quick background as to why did you pick furniture design and making?
Okay, well, I got my start really in sculpture. So, you know, I went to school and studied really kind of classic fine arts training. And then I found that I was really attracted to materials and making, and I'm kind of tumbled into the craft world and very much became a metal worker. But then from there, I was working for a few years as an architectural blacksmith, like really delved deeply into the craft, but I didn't feel like I had a chance to have an artistic voice anymore. Right. I mean, you do, but I really didn't get a chance to say what I wanted to say mm-hmm. with the more traditional techniques. So I went to grad school, and in that experience really fell in love with furniture making. You know, I was still making it primarily out of metal, but there was kind of this perfect storm mm-hmm. where I had the kind of the craft experience of the metalworking and the decorative arts history. I had sort of this perspective that was based in psychology that came from my time as a sculptor mm-hmm. and really fell in love with design. And it's kind of still where I'm at, is having kind of a foot in all three of these fields. So when I'm thinking about making a piece of furniture, I'm thinking about how it's going to make you feel emotionally just as much as physically, as far as the kind of psychological sculpture aspect. Mm-hmm. I'm also trying to push the materials in unusual ways, which is kind of from the decorative arts sense. And then as, you know, as a designer, it's really all about making all these things work together. Like I'd like to think of, you know, the reason for me it's furniture design is the human component.
Right, right.
Right? So I love to make beautiful things, but I don't really have any traction unless there's a function in mm-hmm. there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Now, with the furniture that you do design, do you have an area of speciality? I know some people, for example, only like to focus on designing sofas.
Yeah, I'm definitely a seating girl.
You are a seating girl.
chairs all day, all the time.
Really?
Chairs or, you know, getting wild and doing benches. No, I went through a very long bench phase.
Oh.
And recently I've started doing some chair designs, and it seems, I'm kind of making light of it, but there's a huge difference between a bench and a chair. A chair is one of the most challenging, you know, architectures
yes.
that you can make. And it's also, it's so competitive. I mean, yes. it tends to be the icon of a body of work. So to say, well, I'm going to make a bunch of icons.
Yeah. Well, it does seem to be like the center of piece of furniture in the living room anyway. So
it is. It's one of the, I'd like to think of it as the chair is this one. If all your furniture has a personality and it's a cast of characters, the chair is the one that gets to move around. Oh, there you go. They can even go outside if they want to. Mm-hmm. You know, they can go wherever they want.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, say a bed has a very specific location and a very specific time of day and use, depending on who you are.
Right, somebody use once a day.
Yeah, certainly. Sort of depending. Some people are nappers, you know, and
that's
totally
true.
Different.
That's, yeah.
Maybe that's where the couch comes in. You know, so couch has a certain location. Say a blanket chest has a very specific use and location and a very different psychology and kind of casework mm-hmm. you approach in a very different way. But the chair is sort of the one that's most like us.
Now, you are also have a claim to fame for winning Seasons 2 on the Ellen DeGeneres Design Challenge.
Yes.
So congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. I did not
Thank
know.
You. Thank you.
So tell me.
Yeah, it's been fun. There's been some fans through this week.
So tell me, how did you actually get onto the show? Well,
the casting company called and asked me to apply.
Oh, really?
I know, right? And then there was lots of hoops to be jumping through and lots of application tapes and such. So it's not a overnight process. And they were looking at a lot of different furniture designers for the show. But eventually, made the cut.
You made the cut and won.
Yeah.
So how long was the show like? What was the breakdown of like the taping of the show?
Well,
how did that work?
Of course, because it was like a lot of the competition shows, it was an elimination situation. So you were kind of there as long as you were there, you know. So in the case of the entire run, it was over a month of mm-hmm. shooting, of making is really the thing. And it was an incredible experience, exhausting, but really gratifying.
Yeah.
Really,
no
really
scripting.
Gratifying. No scripting.
Which is great.
And I mean, one of the wonderful things is that they were incredibly respectful. You know, the production company and the different producers, the different cameramen, they're incredibly respectful to people working, you know, and just, you know, trying to tell a story without, you know, causing any... I mean, the deadlines were so tight. Like, there's no need for drama, like, no need to create anything other than just, wow, it is completely unreasonable to build a piece of furniture in, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
It's, like, completely unreasonable. And yet, you find out how much you can do when you're challenged.
Yeah, you're pulling it out from inside.
Yeah, you really do. And it was really great, I feel like, going into that kind of pressure cooker, especially with how much, you know, research I had been doing. You know, I was pretty freshly off of my time at Air and Space,
mm-hmm.
pretty freshly off of the Desert Design Lab. So I had really just been gathering information inside. And in a lot of ways, I think we make, like, we kind of breathe in and out, where it's you'll make and make and make, design, and then you sort of need more information.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the design processes, or like the act of making and designing is processing information.
Right.
Putting it back out.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So it was a great, I guess a great timing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as being able to have something to, you know, reach in deep and pull out.
Yeah.
Oh, I should say, the design challenge was the first time I made a piece of lighting.
Actually. Oh, really?
Yeah. So the last challenge, we had to make a piece of furniture and a piece of lighting.
Oh, okay.
In a couple of days.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Talking about upping the ante.
Yeah.
And so out of the air, with no experience in lighting whatsoever. And it made me think, wow, I want to play with some lighting, you know? And again, it's sort of the design challenge of beyond being just an incredible experience was also really breaking down my ideas of what I could do, what I should do with my work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had to use upholstery and wood and all these different materials. And really, I think the kind of, for me, the best part of being on the show and seeing the show and engaging with the fans is that it made me feel more than ever furniture is for people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems a ridiculous thing to say, but you can get really caught up in the beauty of the material and, you know, how it works and in the object itself. And I believe that objects can speak very powerfully. But that the human part, the part where I get to say, well, this when I'm describing this lamp arcing over your couch and into your living room, you're picturing your living room, mm-hmm. right? It's that connection that makes furniture the most magical material for me to work with. Oh, I should say, the design challenge was the first time I made a piece of lighting. So the last challenge, we had to make a piece of furniture and a piece of lighting.
Oh, okay.
In a couple of days.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Talking about upping the ante.
Yep.
And so out of the air, with no experience in lighting whatsoever. And it made me think, wow, I want to play with some lighting, you know? And again, it's sort of the design challenge beyond being just an incredible experience was also really breaking down my ideas of what I could do, what I should do with my work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had to use upholstery and wood and all these different materials. And really, I think for me, the best part of being on the show and seeing the show and engaging with the fans is that it made me feel more than ever furniture is for people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems a ridiculous thing to say, but you can get really caught up in the beauty of the material and, you know, how it works and in the object itself. And I believe that objects can speak very
yes.
powerfully. But that part, the human part, the part where I get to say, well, when I'm describing this lamp arcing over your couch and into your living room, you're picturing your living room,
mm-hmm.
right? It's that connection that makes furniture the most magical material for me to work with.
Yeah.
It's why I don't do anything else.
So what is next then?
Well, next,
now
right?
You, when you go home.
Now,
yeah.
I have a million projects coming up. I have a lot of things to do. So even before I did the show, I had my schedule kind of set for the year.
Yeah.
So I'm doing some large public art pieces. I'm finishing up one for the city of Arlington right away when I get back. Or actually, I should say Arlington County.
So that's going to be public art?
Yeah, public art.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been really in the past couple of years I've been doing more large projects like that. Also, I'm working on my first line of furniture. Yeah, I'm hoping to have a real set of objects to bring to people by the fall or spring. So it's very different sort of development than just making a unique piece,
mm-hmm.
which again has been sort of how I've worked and certainly will never stop making that sort of work. But I, again, kind of having this really, you know, kind of wonderful, I think, emotional experience about thinking about connecting with people is wanting to make something that has that kind of accessibility, like
mm-hmm.
something that you could have in your home.
Right.
Right? Something that I could have in my home. Which
how do you market yourself then? I mean, you've become quite well known, just you know, even with the work that you've done.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
how do you generally market yourself?
You know, have and work with galleries.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a certain sort of brick and mortar relationship or some of the larger art shows that, you know, happen.
Design shows as well? Or?
You know, I haven't, but that's sort of what I've been thinking of as part of this release in the spring. You know, maybe we're going to do some shows next year. Yeah.
That'd be good.
Probably going to be doing some shows.
Yeah.
There'll probably be some of these lights there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just,
absolutely.
You know, I don't want to promise, but I'm just saying. New York, springtime, probably these.
Yeah. And your website is?
VivianBeard.com. And yeah. One of the great ways to keep up with what I'm doing, because, again, a lot of travel and a lot of experimentation, is my Instagram. Because I keep it all appraised right away.
Yeah, I love Instagram.
I love Instagram too.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's funny because you think about marketing, or the question of marketing is, I think, such a hard one because things have changed so radically, I think, for the art world, even within, you know, my sort of young career.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, really, I think Instagram's changed a lot. You know, the really visual-based social media
yeah.
has really changed a lot.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of where I keep everything nowadays. But it'll change again.
Right. Well, I want to say thank you so much for being on the Cool Project Show.
Definitely, I'm excited.
Such short notice. Yeah. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah.
And again, people can get a hold of you at VivianBeer.com.
VivianBeer.com. Or it's, Vivian Beer on Instagram. Check it out.
And what we'll also will do is have a link for this interview
great.
On the coolprojects.com website, mm-hmm. and it's also on America's Web Radio. Everyone, thank you so much for listening in, and we shall talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.